How do you like your coffee? Freshly roasted? You can just smell it, can't you? Well, how would you like it brought to you? If you're passionate about your coffee, then a Passion for the Bean is for you. At a Passion for the Bean, they custom roast coffee beans from around the world when you place your order, so your coffee is guaranteed to be fresh, rich, full-bodied, and full of flavor. That's not the taste that you get from coffee beans that have been sitting on a supermarket or coffee house shelf for weeks. Now, to have the ultimate coffee experience delivered to your home or office, call a Passion for the Bean at 480-703-2326. That's 480-703-BEAN. A Passion for the Bean has joined forces with the American Stroke Association in the fight to end stroke. Now, you can help by purchasing an ASA signature blend, and 30% of the proceeds will go directly to the ASA. Help us put an end to stroke. The life you save may be your own. And call a Passion for the Bean today, 480-703-2326.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and we're here every week on Tell the Truth Faster dealing with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding balance in body, mind, and spirit. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? How long are you willing to keep yourself stuck in your fear? Not living life to the fullest, not being entirely who you are in the world with a sense of confidence and a sense of purpose and a sense of focus and direction. And that is really what today's show is about. If you listened a couple of weeks ago, we did a show about transsexuals, the challenge of being. And the show was like had so much information in it that we never really got to talk about treatment issues. We got to talk about what it means to be a transsexual and a lot of other issues related to it. We either had an incredible caller, a grandmother named Martha, who has a 4-year-old grandson who she was believing and felt strongly that he is a transsexual, and we talked to Martha for a while and talked about how she could best support her grandson over the years. And by doing so, doing that with me was my guest tonight, an incredible woman who did an incredible job on her first radio interview, and I'm sure she will do just as incredible this evening. Her name is Helen Hill. Herself a transsexual, and she's a graduate of Antioch University with a master's in clinical psychology. She provides individual therapy pertaining to gender trauma and sexuality issues, and she does workshops, which is actually where I met her originally in Los Angeles for the Lesbian and Gay Psychotherapy Association's conference. And she is at the forefront of getting the word out about what it means to be a transsexual, how to help people who are transsexual, and that's what she's going to be talking with us again tonight. Helen Hill, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Stuart, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Not bad. Not as nervous as last time.
Well, you did a really good job last time.
Oh, thanks.
And it's one of the reasons we discussed having you back on, because we really did get some good feedback about the show. And I know both you and myself felt what was lacking was we just didn't get a chance to talk about, once you realize that you are transsexual, what do you do about it? And interestingly enough, from the weekly email blasts that I send out to about 900 people who want to know every week who my guest is, what my topic is, I actually got an email back from Coral Lopez at GLAAD, And she sent me a... She wrote, "Hi, Stuart, I've attached the transgender terminology section from GLAAD's Media Reference Guide. Great to hear you are exploring this topic." And so she sent me this list of terms and definitions, many of which you defined for us last time. And I'd like us to get into it again as a way of spending about 10 minutes just laying the foundation before we get into those treatment issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we do that, I want to remind my listeners, if you're listening on KXAM in the Phoenix area, the number, if you'd like to call in with questions or comments or concerns about what we're talking about tonight, in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And I know many of you are outside the Phoenix area and listening via the Internet, and it's the same phone number, and it's 480-949-1310. So, terminology, Helen.
Okay.
Let's start with... There are a couple of terms here.
Mm-hmm.
Under general terminology, GLAAD lists sex, gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation. So let's start with the difference between gender identity and gender expression.
All right. The idea that they're talking about there is the idea that one can express degrees of masculine and feminine in how you dress and present yourself. So that's really what gender expression comes about. If you lined up, for example, 10 women, all right, in a row, you would see degrees, you could look at them and you could see degrees of masculine and feminine expression in the person. It wouldn't negate their gender in any sense. But in another mm-hmm. sense, it allows the person to express who they are in terms of maybe they see themselves as a tomboy, or maybe they see themselves as athletic or in other ways a more masculine-looking female or a very effeminate-looking female. So it's all, or male, it's all about how people express how they might feel about themselves on any given day. So that's where gender expression comes in.
And gender identity.
Gender identity is really a core issue, just as much as sexual orientation is a core issue. It's the essence of who am I? Who am I really inside this person, this body, this soul of mine? And so gender identity is how the person sees themselves in the what they like to call the binary. I don't like that word. It sounds horrible. But what it really means is, do you see yourself tending to be male, or do you see yourself tending to be female? And there's a whole other group of people who refuse to follow those definitions, but for the sake of the program and for the sake of making sure we address the treatment issues, I following those definitions.
Okay. Yeah, what they say, what Coral's email says in terms of what GLAAD said is that for transgender people, their birth assigned sex mm-hmm. and their own internal sense of gender identity do not match.
That is correct.
And I guess that's the plainest and simplest way of stating what we're going to be talking about tonight is the conflict that people have who may be in a male body but have a total sense of themselves as female, or maybe in a female body and have a total sense of themselves as male.
Exactly.
And so when that situation arises, tonight we're going to be talking about how do you help these people? What do you do about the situation? And is there help for someone in this situation? Let's start with... Yeah, I know that, in my introduction I said that you come under this category, so I know part of what you'll be sharing tonight is possibly how your own treatment progressed, but where does one start?
Where does one... Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
It is a tough tough issue to get help. There are many clinicians who do not understand the term transgender and transsexual, and they will mix it up. There are organizations that will mix it up. There are people who won't touch it at mental health clinics, and I have turned, and they have turned transgendered people away because it makes them nervous. And one of the biggest issues is getting health services and mental health services in particular for this population, because just because one is a psychotherapist doesn't mean that one is comfortable treating people outside of the realm of your experience. And so there's a lot of education that has to go on. So when a transgendered person starts seeking help, they often don't find help. So that's the hardest part. And so they get on the, nowadays, thank God, there's the internet. But in the old days, I went to university libraries, and I did all the readings that I could find, but I wasn't a clinician. I was a young person in my 20s, and everything about transgendered, which wasn't really a word at that point, but everything about transsexual was clinically called deviant, which really scared the devil out of me, because it's like, I'm not a bad person, I'm not deviant, I try to live a good moral life, why are they calling me deviant? And what they were really saying is anything that's outside of the normal spot on the bell curve. But that is not how it sounds. And so there wasn't much except horror stories. And then there were the pornography and the opportunists and things like that that sell it as an issue of sexuality, which it has nothing to do with sexuality, as we discussed last time. Many people think it's about people who want to have kinky sex, and it has nothing to do with sexuality in any sense. Sexuality is a component of all our lives, but defining one's gender has nothing to do with who you go to bed with. So, so basically, the clinical threshold is when it becomes so pervasive that you really, it interferes with your functioning, it interferes with your relationships, it interferes with you being able to work and hold a job and all sorts of things. So it comes so intense that it's the only thing it needs to be addressed. There's no way to have congruence and to have peace and to function unless you go get it addressed. And many of these people are closeted most of their lives, but usually it gets to a point where they can't bottle it up anymore, and then they have to seek help. Thankfully, there's the internet where they can now find help. They can go to organizations like GLAAD, and they can go to a gay and lesbian center, but they can also find many private practitioners out there who do know something, including you, who know something about treating gender identity issues. And I call it an issue rather than a disorder. But once they do it, they need to be very careful. I interviewed 5 therapists before I found one who knew anything about gender and knew anything about trauma and knew anything about intersex. And I found that person in Marie Keller. And so you have to really, really do due diligence to make sure that the person you're talking to actually knows what they're talking about. I know one particular case where the person went to a therapist who said they knew about gender identity issues, and all the therapist knew about was cross-dressers. And the therapist then in turn tried to cure this person of their gender issue by telling them that they should go have sex, they should go get laid, and then they'll be a real man, and then they'll be fine. So there's quite a few therapists out there who really don't have a handle on what gender identity issues are about. So the best thing is to go to organizations like the International Federation of Gender Equality, and there are others, the Intersex Society of North America, the Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association, and there are many organizations on the internet. If you type in transsexual, you type in transgender, then you can find some really great organizations, and of course you can find some really bogus ones, so you have to be careful and do due diligence. The client must do some due diligence, and it's also important for the therapist to keep up and be informed. But once you find a therapist, then that's when you start moving into aspects of how do you address and treat the gender issue of the client.
Mm-hmm. I want to share something that happened to me actually back in the mid-70s when I was still living in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I had a private practice, and people in the community, you know, I did a lot of work with families and teenagers, but also did a lot of work with sexual identity issues, and people in the community knew that I was a therapist and I was a gay man. And there was a client that was referred to me only because nobody in town knew who else to even come close to referring them to. Mm-hmm. And it was a transsexual who had not gone through surgery yet, but was beginning to do cross-dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, first of all, having to be really honest with her. Well, it was a him when he first came in to see me. Very mm-hmm. nice guy who I had to be honest to say, look, this is not an area of my expertise. And even today as a therapist, if somebody came to me and this issue was identified, even though I'm conscious and non-judgmental and would be very supportive, I'm not really sure, like, I would be the best one for them to be working to. I probably would refer them over to you or some organization where this is a specialty, because I do believe it's so important that it's not just someone who has an awareness of it and non-judgment about this, but someone who really has the tools and the skills and the experience behind it. So this guy came to me, and we're talking, and I was very upfront with him about the fact that he was the first transsexual that I've ever really knowingly met. And he felt comfortable enough with me to really want to at least start, because he couldn't find any other therapist in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so with my Gestalt training, it took him a while. He came in probably for about six sessions before, while telling me about I forgot the name he went by, first name or as a male or as a woman. But I remember at a certain point my requesting if he felt comfortable and ready to come in the next time as who
mm-hmm.
she is.
Mm-hmm.
And did some really interesting work. And he was actually aware that he was part of the relationship was her ability to teach me some things that I needed to know. And with my Gestalt training, I actually did some two-chair work with her, where one chair, it was him, and the other chair, it was her, and I had them actually start dialoguing with one another in order to get, I mean, my goal was, and it actually worked, my goal was to help her and him get past their fear and judgment of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And to get so acquainted with one another that they stop struggling and resisting against one another, so that when she was dressed as a woman, there was a different level of comfort that started happening for her, because she felt so much less of the judgment and the pull mm-hmm. from the identified male that he had grown up as, she had grown up as. It was really quite an interesting experience for me, and I think I worked with her for about 6 months before she actually left town, because she had found, I think, an agency in another city that actually worked with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of a stopgap, but at least one that I think I didn't do much harm and maybe did some good with her.
Well, I think you probably did a lot of good, because when there is, in the beginning, there was no one with expertise, so it had to be therapists who would accept the person, who would take them mm-hmm. in and honor who the person is, and give that person a chance to unload, to explore, to understand, because the part of what you described was the seeking of congruence. You know,
mm-hmm.
there is a huge amount of loathing and judgment that transsexuals put upon themselves. And the biggest fear, and I speak from experience, was that everything will change. I will be judged. I will be thrown away, and no one will want me. And in large part, much of that is a well-founded fear, because our society does the amount of abuse and physical, verbal, otherwise, and availability of health service and all, everything happens in a sense that it is very risky for transsexuals. Even though it's better, it's still risky. And so I know transsexuals who will not transition till they retire because they fear losing their job. I know transsexuals who will never come out in the workplace because they just fear losing their jobs. So this is a real issue between how do I come into congruence and how do I stay alive and make a paycheck and pay my bills and put food on the table. So there's a lot of that. I knew when I walked in the door of therapy that everything would change. And I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that everything would change. And because when you want your answers, when you're that desperate, when there's nowhere else to go, then you're pretty ripe for being open for therapy. You really are. There are many transsexuals who don't go to therapy and try to do it themselves, and often many do it themselves. But the problem with that is many also have disasters. Right. And they had never dealt with the emotional issues, and so they're just as closeted afterward as before. And
well, I would think it's very similar to anybody that has any issue that refuses to ask for help, even whether it's an addiction or just depression, who say, well, I'm going to do it on my own. They're really in a lot of denial and a lot of shame because they're afraid to be honest with somebody else and telling the truth.
Absolutely. And there's a flip side to it, though, too. There's a stubborn streak in transsexuals, but I think it's a good thing. It's what keeps us alive. There's a stubborn streak that says, I shouldn't have to ask anyone for permission to be myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't see why I should have to go to therapy to get letters that say I have permission to be the gender I am. And so there's that element. But on the flip side, here's how I present it. And I was one of those people who felt strongly about self-determination, and I still feel strongly about it. But here's how I put it. This is the biggest deal you are going to do in your life. This is a major life event, and there is no going back. All right? Now, if you were I think someone wanting to get married should go to therapy. I think someone wanting to get divorced should go to therapy. And I think if you want to totally change in terms of how people, you're changing yourself in a sense, but you're being yourself, but the culture is different, the way you live changes, the way you function changes, everything changes about your life when you change gender. And so I think it's pretty damn important that people be sure of what they're about to do. And I don't see anything wrong with going to therapy to just air out your thinking and figure out how you feel. A really good therapist can help.
To me, I think that is the primary purpose for going to therapy, but you mentioned something just a moment ago that is a secondary imperative to someone who's really looking to go through the complete experience in terms of, in addition to the surgery. You mentioned something about a letter. What is that about?
Well, that's a great lead-in, and we're going to talk about the treatment and standards and all, if that's okay. There are five elements to treating the clinical work of working with a transsexual. There's psychotherapy, there's diagnostic assessment, there's hormone therapy, there's real-life experience, which is basically living in the gender you say you are before you have surgery, and then there's surgical therapy, which is kind of the last step. So there are those five parts, and it's all work together. The clinician needs to make sure that they have accurately diagnosed the person's gender issue and looked for any kind of comorbidity. That means, is there anything else going on? Is there an eating disorder going on? Is there depression? Is there schizophrenia? Is there bipolar? Is there some severe personality disorder going on that may make you think you have a gender issue when really something else is in play? So it's very important that these things be examined. So diagnostic assessment, I use 165-page questionnaire with my clients because I want to know about drug use. I want to know about growing up. I want to know what their relationships are like. I want to know as much as possible so that I can help my client through what they're dealing with. And it's very, very important. Now, this said, hormones are often are diagnostic. Hormones can really have an effect that is like an antidepressant. If a person is truly a transsexual, then the brain is wired different than the genitals, as we discussed last week, that the brain could be wired female while the body parts look male. And so if the brain is wired male and you give it female hormones, it doesn't work so well. And basically the people who try it and think that they're maybe a female actually hate it. And it just is not a good situation. If the brain is wired female and you give the person estrogens, it's like turning on a light bulb. It's like the depression usually lifts, almost always actually. I don't want to say 100% because we never know what the mitigating factors are. There is just like the brain just is more aware, more awake, more paying attention. It's like this has been running on low power for forever and ever, and now it's finally getting what it needs. And so hormones can be very diagnostic as to whether this person is truly a transsexual or not. So when a client comes in, they would have to, according to the standards of care, let me mention the name, the Harry Benjamin Standards of Care. It's 22 pages long, and it is what governs therapists who wish to treat transsexuals. Now, it's called a guideline, but for 22 pages, that's one pretty thick guideline. And there are many people, transsexuals and clinicians, who feel that, you know, it's too old school, too narrow-minded, too standard in terms of standard sexual roles and expectations. On the other side, you need to know what you're getting into, and it is a huge shift in your thinking, living, and functioning. So I don't really see it as a bad thing. I see it as a good thing, that you need to be really clear what you're getting into because everything changes. Everything changes. So the standards of care call for 3 months of psychotherapy before you can get a letter from your therapist to go see a doctor, and you present the letter to get hormones, all right? Because, remember, the therapist's license is on the line. You're not the only one. The client isn't the only one on the line. The therapist is on the line, too. And the therapist is saying, by presenting that letter, that your thinking is clear, you know what you're doing, and I am very supportive and understanding what you're doing, and so that when an endocrinologist or some other physician sees that letter, they're not thinking you just walked off the street and said, "Hi, today I want to be Jill." Okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's very important because you're asking, yes, it's your life, but you're asking a lot of people to bet on you and stake their licenses and their living on you. So it's very important that everybody be on the same page. Now, yes, there are doctors who will treat you without the letter. There are people who will bypass the whole system. But then again, you know, you may not be ready for what happens to you.
Stuart, we have a caller, Chris from Louisiana.
Chris, thanks for calling in. Welcome to the
Hello.
Show. What can we do for you? Yes. Well, are you there, Chris?
It's a long story. I'm 66 years old. I have been on hormones since about 67, 68. I have tried to shake this thing. I have used cyberspace a lot. I have taken hormones for that length of time. I've been open to just about anything. I'm going to a fine physician in New Orleans right now at the VA. I'm also retired Navy after 21 years. So, and having a hard time with this. I'm torn. I think the best way to describe this whole thing, and maybe you can identify with it, it's like a civil war going on inside your body. and I have tried to shake this thing, and I'm at loss. I would hope the doctor would be going to Southern Comfort so I could talk to her personally, but I don't know if she is or not.
Helen, you're the expert. Go go ahead.
What can I do at this point?
Well,
am I going to shake this thing or probably not?
That is the question that many transsexuals want. They say, I just want to get rid of it. I want it to go away. Give me a pill that makes me glad to be a man. Okay? That makes me forget that I'm a woman inside. That can just rewire my brain. And the real issue is from all the latest actual studies that have actually dissected brains and done brain scans, that if you really are transsexual, your brain is wired female. Or if you're transsexual and you're a woman, your brain is wired male. So the question is, do you want it to stop, or do you want to get help to deal with it and come in congruence? See, the battle raging on in you is the fact that there is so much at stake in your life, in your surroundings, in your family, in everyone you know. So there's a lot at stake, absolutely. But inside, if you had been a child left alone to develop as you should, then you wouldn't be facing the shame and the stigma of what you have to deal with. And so I would ask you, do you want it to go away, or do you want to get help to learn how to have peace about it?
Well, I've been open to help. I'm going to Dr. Jamie Booth, mm-hmm. who transitioned herself and said mm-hmm. she fought it, I think, for something like 10 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you could say she lost or gained. I know I'm open to anything right now to just have peace of mind. And that's another reason why I'm going to Southern Comfort. I've been also under the psychological care of a Dr. Hamilton at the VA clinic now in New Orleans. It was a hospital, but mm-hmm. Katrina did a nice job on that.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. Well, I would suggest, one, I praise you for being open, okay? The best way to get your answer, which may not be mine or Stuart's, is to, one, don't judge yourself so harshly, because it sounds to me you're coming down really hard on yourself, one. Two, be open to giving yourself some slack and give yourself some permission to find your answer. It sounds like to me, I'm giving myself permission to get the answer, but then again, I just want it all to just stop. You know, I want to be able to forget about it and never think about it again. And that's what psychotherapy is for, so that you can deal with it, because it's gotten to the point where it's probably paralyzing you in many ways in terms of how you feel about yourself and how you function. So you want to, if you have a good therapist, you want to keep going with her or him, and who's very well versed, and you want to keep working this issue. You want to be open and just let the power of the fear be taken away by continuing to talk it out and hear, give yourself a chance to be heard. But part of the thing is that we shut down. We turn ourselves off. We don't give ourselves permission to listen to ourselves, and because of our own fear. And you sound like there might be some fear here. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You got it. I'm wondering, how long did you fight it?
45 years.
Before you transitioned?
Yes.
And how old were you? I know it's not good to ask a woman age, but I'm very concerned.
No, all right. I was 46 when I transitioned.
Okay.
And you know what? I hated my therapist. I was angry with her. I was combative. I didn't want to go down this road because I knew my whole life would change, and I wanted to blame everyone else for how I felt. But in the end, I found by being able to feel it and open up that it lost the power to convict me and send me to hell for something that's not my fault in the first place, for something that I'm simply am. And I'm hoping that you'll give yourself that chance to simply be yourself without judgment, because you're a good person, and you have to know that. You serve the country, you try to live a good life, a moral life, so give yourself a chance to find your answers without conviction, without throwing yourself
I think I kind of hope that You know, with NAM, the Navy would have taken care of my whole problem. And
most people freak out on this kind of issue. So
you know, at least if something would have happened over there, it would have been all over for me.
Right, I hear what you're saying.
I know you've flown in airplanes, but if you want to thrill trot while they're shooting at you, I have a missile coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess sometimes I wish that it connected, but it didn't. So.
I guess there's a reason for it, but I'm just
searching for peace, and at this point I'm open to anything.
Chris, can I say something?
Let me say something to you, Chris, because you're saying some very key things here from my perspective, and that is, as Helen reminded you, you kept using the words, I just want this to stop, I want it over with, but it feels to me like you've had opportunities to make it stop in the sense of suicide, in the sense of being in Vietnam, and could have easily ended your life there if you had really wanted to. But there's something inside of you that I'm hearing at age 66 has kept you alive through age 66, because there is a desire to find some peace and be alive at the same time. And I commend you for that, but it feels to me like that's the struggle you're still in. You don't want to die. You want peace. You want to find solution here and find some balance, and yet fear is what's keeping you stuck. And it feels the question I would ask you is, in the therapy you're doing, are you also attending groups where there's actually a network of other people going through the same thing that you're getting support from?
I have tried a few groups and wound up meeting some people that, I mean, eventually got into the thing where they were very sexually oriented. And I'm not, if that's possible, I'm just not there yet. And mm-hmm. I'm just having too much of a situation in dealing with this. And you know, I've got a wife that's, I've been married to for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
She's very upset about this thing. She doesn't want me, like I was going to, I know you know about Southern Comfort. She doesn't mm-hmm. want me going there. I've seen Dr. Metzler over there in Phoenix. I like him. He's also from New Orleans, incidentally. And talked to him, and he kind of gave me an answer that I guess I always knew, but that, you know, why is this happening to me? And he said, I either have part or parts of a female brain. And I know I heard you talking about the brain and it analyzation, and it's all postmortem, though, right?
No, well,
they can't do it MRI, MRA.
Actually, no. UCLA is doing a study right now where they are scanning the brains of male-to-female transsexuals. And the anecdotal evidence, because they haven't released the findings, but the transsexuals who have participated, who were told of their scans, at least unofficially, the look is that their brains are identical to women. And so it's very, very, becoming very solid evidence that transsexuals, yes, it is all in the head, because you're really a woman in the head. And
can they do
crazy.
It? What method do they use? MRI, MRA?
They use MRI.
They use MRI, and there's also a thing called a SPECT scan or a PET scan.
Exactly.
Do they also use that? Because what these SPECT scans actually show is the functioning of the brain, so it goes beyond the MRI, so they can actually see what parts of the brain are fully functioning or functioning the way like a male brain would be or a female brain would be, and they can compare it that, and all it is taking a picture of the brain. It's a three-dimensional color picture.
And I'm not sure how far...
You're saying a SPECT scan, like a speculation?
No. It's
yeah.
a type of scan that watches how the brain
right.
works.
Right.
It's
the letters are an acronym for a particular name of the scan.
It's like detecting the electrical activity of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it kind of like what it does. And so...
No, I'd be open to that. At this point, I'm open to anything.
Well, Chris, it sounds like to me you have a lot of pressures on you that make it even tougher. And many of the transsexuals do. And I would just encourage you to keep being open and don't let the fear stop you from realizing that inside you is a really good person, and all he or she wants is some peace and some answers. So don't let the fear overwhelm you, and you will get your answer. You really will.
Chris, well, I really want... go ahead.
No, it is a fear, and, you know, the other part of it is on the religious end, and I thought I'd be going to hell if I go through SRS, and there is a Sister DeRuin or Sister Derwin who lived in New Orleans and now lives in Tucson, Arizona, and has helped me a little bit through that element. But it's just a big plate, and
it's a
thinking
plate.
Of it as a meal, you know, and it's just a big meal, and it's hard to eat the whole meal.
Yeah, it's like ordering the biggie meal at Wendy's.
Chris, I really want to thank you for calling in, because I know even that probably took some courage on your part. And it sounds to me like you're talking about this being a meal. It sounds like you're at a buffet, and you are taking from all the right plates right now in terms of the spiritual, in terms of the psychological, in terms of the physical, the hormones, and that you're getting the support you need. And like Helen keeps saying, you know, continue with what you're doing and extend the support system that you have. And the one piece that I think she may not be willing to, but would really be helpful, is if your wife was willing to get some counseling with you,
right,
or on her own, and get educated in terms of what the realities of this really are, so that she can be more supportive or make some choices and decisions of her own at the same time, and stop judging you so harshly.
And so. Chris, just before you go, and part of why your spouse might be reacting the way she is what I said last time, and that is, she's thinking, my God, what have I married, and what does that say about me? Does that make me a lesbian? Does this make me a bad person? And so then she projects or takes out a lot of her own fears on you. And so try to go with love and understanding and be open, and give her the chance to make her decisions too. Don't try to solve everybody's problems.
Chris, I want to thank you for calling.
Okay.
I want to thank you for calling in, and you really have made this show tonight a very human and personal thing for our listeners, and I really want to thank you for being that aspect of the show, and just know that our hearts and our prayers are with you, that you really find some really loving, peaceful place for yourself in the body.
I appreciate that, and I have the doctor's website. I'd like to call her up and give her some information of other people that could help in the South area that she may know of, and maybe one day I can help others through this, you know. I don't know. At this point, I'm not sure I can help myself.
I think you'll do a great
job. Well,
that's
the first step, yeah. Okay, thanks again for calling in, Chris, and the best to you.
And thank you, and God bless both of you. Is this going to happen every Friday night now?
Well, the show is on every Friday night. It's called Tell the Truth Faster. I deal with a variety of mental health issues, but this is the second time I've had Helen on, and who knows, I may have her on again. If you keep track of my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, you'll always know from week to week who my guest and what the topic is.
Oh, okay. So right. Helen won't be on every Friday then at this time.
No. I'm a troublemaker, and he has to get rid of me.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Good luck to you.
Both of you, my prayers are with y'all.
Take care.
Thank you. You too.
You know,
that couldn't have been better placed in terms of what we're dealing with here. And I realize we're back to only having about 15 minutes, and we haven't even gotten into the real-life experience part and the surgical part.
Well, I'm going to rip through all this really quick, and then we can go through it. So you go to therapy for 3 months. I insist my clients come weekly so I can get an idea. And then you would get, if everything is fine, which, I went to my therapist, and the one thing I want to know is, I want to know if I'm crazy, okay? I want to know if I'm losing my mind, you know? And I can say, I have 3 letters on my possession that say I'm sane and able to make my own decisions, which makes me, so I make a joke of it, like how many other people carry letters around with them. But the idea is I want to be thorough, and I want to know myself. And if after 3 months, everything is fine, you get a hormone letter. That's the therapist has said, you know, I have confidence in you, your thought processes, and your ability to make decisions, and I, you know, you are gender dysphoric or having gender identity issues, and the next step in treatment is hormones, and so you take this letter to an endoc or some other doctor who will treat you, and then you start hormones. All right? Now, the next thing, of course, is real-life experience. Many clinicians have a disagreement about how much you stay in therapy while you do real-life experience. Thank God I stayed in therapy, because real-life experience is not, there's no book for it. There's no manual. There's nothing to tell you what's going to happen to you.
And what do you mean by real-life experience at this point?
Real-life experience means before you can have surgery, you must live in the gender you say you are for a year. You must live it full time. You can't stay in your room at home and walk around the room. You live it at home, at work, at church, in the work, in the community. You be who you say you are. You also get your legal documentation changed, so you function basically full time as the gender you say you are. Now, why this is going on, you're on hormone therapy, so your body's changing, and you're probably having electrolysis. So all this is happening, not covered by insurance, by the way. And so you're going to be putting out some money. You're going to be probably putting out between $20,000 and $40,000 just to do electrolysis and acquire a wardrobe. And, I mean, you know, you have to acquire a wardrobe. How are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn to use the restroom of the opposite sex. Do you know how scary that is? You have to come, you don't walk into the workplace and tell your boss, tomorrow I'm going to be Jill. No. There's a procedure. You go to HR. You let them know what's going on. You present your letters that your therapist has written. And if there's legal protections in your state, then you work through the systems that are established so that you don't just say, Friday I'm Jack and Monday I'm Jill. No, there's a way to do this. So you make sure people get informed. You make sure that people know what's up. You make sure that everybody's on board. And you tell your family. You tell your friends. You tell your church. And you lose a lot of relationships. And you gain a lot of relationships. Your whole life changes before your very eyes. And in many wonderful ways and in many painful ways, as you find out that there are people who can't come along with you as you be authentic, as you
and
be
sometimes
honest.
That means your spouse, like Chris was talking about.
Sometimes
his,
it means
if
your
his
spouse.
Wife, if his wife does not get some help and understanding on this, then it
right.
may mean that a 30-some-odd-year marriage ends. And yet we have other stories where the spouse grows to understand and supports and stays together.
And so this is a big deal. I mean, we're talking first, lots of firsts. Learning who you are, living as you are for the first time in your life. There's just so many firsts going on. It's just a wonderful, the butterfly coming out of the cocoon. Maybe a little late, but better late than never. And so you go through 12 months living as the gender you say you are. And at that point, we look at eligibility. That is, did you do 12 months of continuous hormone therapy? Have you had 12 months of successful real-time living? What is successful? Well, that's between you and your therapist, all right? That's really, I know that sounds like a cop-out, but that's the closest I'm going to come to that because I'm not the person to tell you what a success is. You participate in regular psychotherapy during those 12 months, and you understand the cost, the hospitalizations, the surgeries, everything that you need to do, and you know about the surgeons who provide the surgical therapy. So there's a lot that's expected of a client as they go down the road. But once they have shown their readiness, then they not only need to see you as a therapist, they need to go for a visit with a psychologist or a psychiatrist because there must be two signatures or two letters that say you are ready for surgical therapy, for SRS. And one is from your therapist, and one is, usually it's one visit or two visits when you see a psychologist or a psychiatrist who's working with your therapist. So it's not like you go walk down the street and meet somebody you don't know. It's someone who already knows your therapist, has a relationship with you, and so they are aware of your case. Once you've had that, if there are no red flags, if nothing's coming up, then you get your surgery letter, and you may then proceed and have sex reassignment surgery.
Now, a question is, you keep talking about the expense of this. Are there insurance companies that will cover any or all of this? And how about the Veterans Administration for Chris? I mean, he probably, you know, do they cover any of this?
No, they don't. I wish they did. Mm-hmm. Canada covers it. Canada's just starting to. The city of San Francisco covers it, so everybody could rush over to San Francisco and work for the city. But on the whole, there are no insurance companies that cover this. They say it's elective, which it's not. And they say it's experimental, which it's not. So it's really, really, because this is often gets to be a life or death situation. When a person is at this end of it where they can't function, it's life or death. And it's very, very serious. And so you have to put it the bill yourself, and you can expect to pay anywhere. Depending where you go for surgery, if you go to Thailand, you can go for like $16,000 or $20,000 all the way to $70,000. Okay? Mm-hmm. And this, I'm not even talking about female to males, where it's much more expensive and the results are not very good. And so we're looking at costs that must be borne by the person. And so often I get, when I work with people on Skid Row and teach them about how to deal with transgender and transsexual, they say, well, that person hasn't had surgery, so they're still a man. I said, no. If you have 70 grand, you can have the surgery. You know, I say, but does that make them any less a woman?
Right. So there are people who cannot afford the surgery, but are on the hormones and continue maybe for years living the life of the gender that they know they themselves to be.
Exactly.
But they may never be able to afford the surgery.
And they live their life unassuming, and no one would know. You don't go around asking what's between a person's legs. Mm-hmm. And then there are transsexuals who choose not to have surgery for many different reasons. But again, it doesn't make the gender any less true. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue is congruency and having peace about where you are.
Right. I want to bring up one little side thing here. I don't know if you read today's paper in the obituaries, but you mentioned this guy at the workshop, and I think you mentioned him the last time you were on the show. John Money passed away today, or yesterday, or the last couple of days. And John Money is the doctor who pioneered study of genetic identity in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from what you've told me, he's very controversial and have done some things that almost set this whole thing back. Go ahead.
He brought it to the forefront, but he also did some bad things in the sense of suggesting that gender, boy or girl, is all a matter of how you raise them, that it's all cultural and sociological, and ignore the biological component, saying you could... The boy whose penis was burned off during a circumcision, and he had them raised as a girl, and said it's all cultural, and they'll be just fine, and they weren't. The person committed suicide. Many of his patients committed suicide. So, as our audience knows, whichever side of the fence you're on, boy or girl is not simply a matter of how they're raised.
Right. So, we have only a couple of minutes left, and I really want to give you a chance to take about 60 seconds to sum up and really bring home some point that you really feel is probably the most important thing that people listening can understand about transsexuals.
Well, the best thing I can say is if you've ever been frightened about some aspect of yourself that you dare not let anyone know, if you think no one understands you, if you think you're just, you know, unique and you have to keep secrets or no one will want you, then you're just like me, you know, and gender is an aspect of self that none of us should have to be afraid of. And we need to be able to give people the chance to find their answers without throwing them away.
Excellent. And well put. And to take it one step further for people who are listening who's saying, I still can't relate to this, It's all relative, but try and relate to something that's gone on in your own life where you just didn't feel like you fit in, or you just didn't feel like you belonged, or you just didn't feel like you were in the right place mm-hmm. at that time, and then multiply it by 1,000.
And that's
a lot of what a transsexual is experiencing, and that's the level of compassion and understanding that they are entitled to and in need of in our society, and maybe even in your own family.
I want to thank you for having me on.
Well, Helen, I really want to thank you again, and maybe we'll do it again in a few months. Obviously, this is a topic that has been generating some calls. I want to let people know that if they want to reach Helen, there are two ways of doing this. She has her own website, which is Helen, H-E-L-E-N, -hill.com, Helen-Hill, or you could go to tellthetruthfaster.com and go to that, which is my website for the show, and get the link to her website from there. You can email either her or myself from tellthetruthfaster.com, and just like the show she did a couple of weeks ago is now up in the archives, this show will be up and running, so if you want someone else to listen to it or you want to hear it again, like all the shows I've done for the last 4 years, tellthetruthfaster.com is a really great resource for mental health issues. So Helen, thanks again so much.
Thank you very
much for taking your time tonight. And I want to thank all my listeners in the Phoenix area. This is KXAM Stuart Altshuler on Tell the Truth Faster. We'll see you next week.